On today's episode of the All Things Pizza podcast, I'm joined by Jenny Zhang, who will take us on a journey 6,000 miles away to China, where her and her grandmother forged a special bond over the most unlikely of foods, pineapple pizza from Pizza Hut. Let's do this. Welcome to the latest episode of the All Things Pizza podcast. I'm your host, Jason Fearman, and this year my pizza blog, I Dream of Pizza, is turning 10 years old. Over the years, I've gotten the opportunity to meet so many amazing people in the pizza community, so in conjunction with the blog's 10-year anniversary celebration, I decided to start a podcast to uncover the stories and personalities behind the world's most beloved food. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Jenny Zhang. Earlier this year, Jenny published an incredibly heartwarming article for Eater about a unique tradition that she has with her grandmother in Beijing, eating Hawaiian-style pizza from Pizza Hut when she goes to visit. And I wanted to invite Jenny onto the podcast to share this story with you and discuss some of the topics she reflects upon in the piece. So Jenny, first off, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
This was seriously one of the most thoughtful and emotional things I've read recently, so really excited to have you share it with our listeners today. So with that, I encourage everyone to sit back, relax, and enjoy Jenny's story about pizza and family.
So the essay is called American Pie. When I think of Pizza Hut, I think of my grandmother. She's 90. She lives in Beijing. I can't write out her actual name for you. I've always just known her as Lalal, the word for mother's mother. But I can close my eyes and describe the wispy texture of her hair, the way laughter crinkles her face into a cascade of smile lines that my brother and I call Holdenlian, or monkey face. How every phone call is a barrage of questions. Did you eat yet? Are you tired? Busy? Is it cold there? Are you sick? Get more rest. Don't work yourself to death. I can tell you her favorite kind of pizza, too. Hawaiian from Pizza Hut. Lala only ever eats pizza when my family visits, every 1 or 2 years. She's like the sweet and sour tang of Pizza Hut's Hawaiian pizza, studded with chunks of pineapple and ham, slicked with grease. Its pan crusts the ideal level of chewiness to rip through with her teeth, ever since she first tried it in the U.S. Over the years, eating pizza together in Beijing became a tradition, ritualizing my emigrant family's brief return to our home country with an offering of the perfect emblem of America, a universally beloved dish that illustrates the vast excess and choice and availability that together define American consumption. Pizza. We don't fly the pizza in from the States, of course, that would be truly insane. There are more than 1,600 Pizza Huts in China. There, the chain is called Bishengke, a nice bit of transliteration branding that combines the characters bi, must, sheng, win, and ke, guest, for two possible meanings. One, Pizza Hut is the foreign restaurant or guest that must win in China. And two, Pizza Hut must win over its Chinese guests. The Pizza Hut closest to Lalo's apartment is about half a mile away, a block past the Wudaokou station in Beijing's Haidian district. I went there for the first time in 2009. It was the year Lalo finally moved back to Beijing for good after spending most of my childhood bouncing back and forth between China and the U.S., her home country and her adopted one. My family thought it was a nice gesture to buy her pizza, a reminder of the life she'd had with us in America. I was grateful for the chance to go outside, a momentary respite from the stuffy gloom of Lalo's dilapidated apartment, which is filled with decades-old furniture, dust, and Cultural Revolution-era relics. Clothing stores, restaurants, and shopping plazas line the streets, clustering around the crowded subway station. There are too many people, as is always the case in Beijing, but it felt invigorating after the stillness of the apartment. I could have kept walking for miles. Too soon, my mother and I arrived at the new Pizza Hut, located in the same plaza as a French-inspired bakery and a KFC. The staircase led from the lobby to the dining room on the second floor. It took only one glance to spot the major differences between this bright, airy restaurant and the shabby Red Booth version I knew from my childhood. Pizza Hut, like other Western imports, is a more upscale affair in China, and the clientele, indulgent parents treating their treasured only child, gaggles of junior high students flush with red envelope money, 20-something couples who possess the impeccable sartorial sense and the careless ease of the four die, the second generation millennial children of the wealthy, reflected that. 5 minutes observing the customers at a Pizza Hut was a textbook in the growing wealth gap that separates the pizza full in China from the pizzaless. People like my uncle, who had lived out his youth in the countryside during the Cultural Revolution and who had never eaten a pizza before my mother gave him a slice of Lalo's just last year. We chose what would become our regular order, more or less. A medium Hawaiian pizza for Lala, and pizzas and appetizers for my brother and I to share with the rest of the family. As we waited, I watched the servers zoom around with characteristic efficiency. Most of them looked like college students, perhaps the multiple universities that Wudako is famous for. For a brief moment, I fantasized about what it would be like to live in China as an actual Chinese person, unbound to family obligations and the jittery unease of being a foreigner. To roam the nearby campuses on my own, to join fellow youths on outdoor volleyball courts, to idle away hours in a restaurant like Pizza Hut with a group of laughing friends, not my mother. Then our order was ready, and we were back home before noon, arranging the food on plates with chopsticks at Lala's bedside. Perched on the creaky armchair opposite her, I watched her chew each mouthful forcefully, her teeth still strong despite her age. I took a bite from my own cheese pizza, savoring the oily stretch of the hot mozzarella. The same satisfying constant across our two pizzas, our two continents. Is it good? I prodded eagerly in Mandarin, hunting for any sort of validation. Hotcher, she replied. Tastes good. A reasonable person might ask, why would you travel 6,000 miles to China and eat pizza? It is only with a small amount of shame that I admit that for the longest time, my favorite food to eat in China was pizza. I was always a picky eater, perhaps as a result of some weird genetic tic or because I was coddled so much by my parents, or, as I half-heartedly theorized, possibly something to do with my neuroses and mental hang-ups about growing up as a second-generation Chinese-American. Steaming soup dumplings, bowls of slippery glutinous rice tangyuan, submerged in faintly sweet boiling water, Peking duck roasted to a crisp, bundled alongside spring onions and savory sweet bean sauce in paper-thin wraps. I crave these kinds of dishes now, but until my late teens, I clung instead to the most American food I could get my hands on, whenever my parents dragged me back to the homeland. In a way, the choice was predetermined. I'm an American born to Chinese immigrants. I dress American, I talk American, and I've even been told by both relatives and strangers in China that I carry myself with something of an American manner. The way I ate, I imagine my overseas family members surmising, must also be modeled after Americans. And so, whenever I returned to China as a child, my relatives bought me pizza, fries, chicken wings. In between home-cooked meals and lazy Susan feasts that I picked at clumsily with my chopsticks, aunts, grandparents, and cousins suggested American fast food chains with a forced congeniality tinged with a quiet strain of desperation. You'll eat this, won't you? You won't eat our food. You need this, or you'll go hungry. They weren't totally wrong. I felt joyfully, wonderfully sated when I ate those foods in China, but each wave of gratification came paired with resentment. At my relatives, for assuming I would only be satisfied by American food, and at myself for proving them right. Between my reluctance to eat Chinese food and my desire to disprove my relatives' belief that I only ate American junk, eating in China became a challenge, and so sometimes I just wouldn't. In real feat of mental gymnastics, I convinced myself that these trips amounted to free summer weight loss camps, but it grew impossible to ignore how miserable mealtimes my family made me. For Chinese families, there's no greater sign of affection and hospitality than aggressively urging loved ones, "Eat this, try that, fill your plate more, you haven't touched this yet, why aren't you eating?" There's so much of everything, voices, people, food, attention, pressure, that I would often end my few bites of a meal blinking back tears. Lalo's home was the blessed exception. It was just her, for starters, not the jumble of grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins that make up larger reunions with my dad's side of the family. Her rotating cast of caretakers cooked simple meals that she ate sitting up in bed. I was free to partake or not. She wanted me to, of course, as any Chinese grandmother would, but she never hounded me or commented on my eating choices. Pizza Hut with her felt remarkably free of the judgment that I was so terrified of in every other corner of China. I trusted that she ate with such relish the pizza we brought her because it was an indulgence she truly liked, not because she pitied her granddaughter, who was too American to eat anything else. The last time I returned to Beijing, in October 2017, I was struck yet again by how different Pizza Hut looked from memory. Now cast in dim moonlighting, I could just make out handles of Bacardi and Bailey's over a kitchen counter that resembled a bar. Fast-talking, quick-footed servers were all black in charcoal gray aprons emblazoned with "Love to Share," a slogan that I've never once in my life associated with the chain. Only some errant red rooftop logos betrayed that the restaurant was still Pizza Hut, mutated into a more stylish, vaguely bistro-like setting. My mother and I flipped through the menu with trepidation. There were escargot, inexplicably. Peking style duck, spaghetti bolognese with a British Australian spelling, baked rice with goulash, Texan style steak far removed from Lone Star State, tiramisu, frozen blue margaritas, the semblance of an entire international tour from the comfort of a Pizza Hut in some random Beijing neighborhood. But where's the chain's namesake? Where was the fucking pizza? We turn a few more pages, and there, finally, a Hawaiian pizza, still available in all its cheesy American glory. During lunch that day, I ate nothing in an act of rebellion, still pissy from an earlier argument with my mom. Lalo, too, was in a mood of her own, as was becoming more common with each passing year. Muttering about how unhealthy pizza was, followed by grievances about our hired caretaker at the time, she swatted me in my camera away as I snapped a few photos. This time, I didn't ask if the pizza was good, and she didn't offer. Does Lalo even like pizza, really? I found myself wondering. Recently, my mom suggested that Lalo doesn't particularly crave it. People's taste buds dull as they get older, she explained, and besides, her mother was never one to be picky about what she ate. It became a tradition just because there weren't that many other options, my mom said over the phone. She doesn't have a lot of favorite foods. One is pizza. So I had my concerns. I asked my mom to put me on her version of a three-way call with Lalo. Do you like the Pizza Hut pizza? I asked my grandmother in Mandarin. I like pizza. I wait for you every year to come back and buy me pizza, Lalo said. There's no one else to buy pizza for me. Then she launched into a barrage of complaints against her caretaker, my uncle, and anyone else who'd wronged her. God help anyone who draws the wrath of an old Chinese grandmother. I interrupted her before she got too deep into the diatribe. So you eat the pizza because you like it, not just for our sake, because I didn't like Chinese food when I was younger. I eat Chinese dishes now, after all. In that sense, maybe the pizza ritual had become pointless. She sounded genuinely surprised, almost offended. It's not for you. You can eat pizza whenever you want in America. I couldn't help but laugh and prod her one more time. Do you still want us to buy you pizza next time we go back? Yes, I want it, Lalo said. We'll all eat it together.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks.
How does it feel reading it out loud?
Awkward. I guess I so rarely read anything I write out loud, let alone for a microphone.
Great. Well, you read it beautifully, so thank you for sharing it.
Thanks so much.
I'm curious. So this came out a month or two ago. When did you decide that you wanted to write a piece? Like, how did it come about?
I think I'd been thinking about it for maybe over a year before it actually published in August earlier this year. I'd always kind of known about Eater's Life in Chains sort of series, which is just about the connections and sort of relationships that people have with chain restaurants. And for me, when I thought of which chain was kind of most significant in my life, I immediately thought of Pizza Hut and the sort of tradition I had my grandmother.
That's great. Have you written other pieces for Eater or other sort of food publications at any point? Or I know you were working at Eater at the time, but
yeah, I used to work at Eater in a different sort of role, not like writing or editing full time. So this was kind of my first, I guess, like most serious attempt at writing something, especially writing something personal. But I have written a couple of other pieces for Eater, and I would love to continue writing more and kind of expanding the different subjects that I tackle, including like food or like other things and like culture and just a whole variety of topics that I'm interested in.
That's awesome. So I want to construct a little family tree or talk about a little family history. So your grandmother is in her 90s.
Yes.
So she was born in the 1920s.
Yes, I guess roughly.
Okay.
If the math works out.
And was she born in Beijing?
She was born not in Beijing. The geography is a little fuzzy to me as well, but she was born, she's from like the rural countryside.
Okay.
And I'm not exactly certain what the name of her village was, but the way that it's been told to me by like my grandmother and my mother, her daughter, she was born in like a rural countryside and didn't come to a city until she married my grandfather, who is pretty significantly older than her. He brought his whole family over to the city, including his siblings as well. And that's kind of how they got settled in Beijing. And my mom ended up being born in Beijing.
Gotcha. And when did your mom come into the picture?
Let's see. I think not until later. So God, I don't want to do the math and reveal my mom's age.
All right, well, we can leave it at sometime in the mid-20th century.
Yes, that's accurate.
Gotcha. Okay. And then your mom grew up in Beijing?
Yeah, she grew up primarily in Beijing, but also spent part of her childhood in Sichuan as well. So my mom, her history I know a little bit better just because I've asked her about it before, and she has clear memories of it, and it's been more recent for her, and she can like tell part of it in English if she needs to, which is, we often communicate in a mixture of like Mandarin and English. She grew up in a pretty turbulent time, like Cultural Revolution, of course, and then, you know, staying in China all the way through the 1989 Tiananmen like massacre, which is eventually kind of like the final nail in the coffin that convinced both of my parents to like make the permanent move to the U.S.
Gotcha. And what year did that take place in?
That was in 1989. So my mom had been in the U.S. by herself, like doing like studying, but she and my dad, who were married at the time, they always thought they would just like stay in China. But from what they tell me, like the Tiananmen massacre, which both my parents were in Beijing for, that kind of like really finally convinced my dad, like, no, let's get out of here. Let's go to America.
And when they came to America, where in America did they end up initially?
West Virginia.
Okay.
So
obviously.
Yeah. It's always like a fun fact I like to pull out when I'm out of fun facts, like guess where I was born. So basically a lot of the Chinese immigrants at the time who were largely like college students or like grad students, it's kind of like educated class. The U.S. had been opening its doors, especially to a lot of these students from China who had like engineering or like physics backgrounds or studies. So that kind of opened up this whole wave of similarly like educated people of my parents' generation. So like most of the other Chinese American people my age I know, we're all sort of similar background in that our parents do pretty similar things or came for similar reasons at a similar time.
Great. So that was 1989. Mm-hmm. And then when did you come along?
So I was also born in West Virginia, which was where my parents kind of had their, I guess, master's or what the graduate program that they came to the U.S. for. Okay. I was born in 93. And I have an older brother as well, who was born a couple years before me. And then I think I was only in West Virginia for maybe another year or so before my family moved to Michigan, which has kind of been the permanent home ever since.
Gotcha. So that's where you grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your mother lives where now?
Kind of a funny story. Both of my parents are currently in China.
Okay.
For different work-related reasons. My mom has been in Shanghai for the past year, but actually for like Korean work-related reasons, she'll be coming back from China at the end of the year. So basically it will have spent like a year there. But my dad will have stayed there longer and will continue to stay there a little bit longer, I think. So Michigan is the home base, but variously scattered around different parts of the world for a couple of years now.
Let's tie this all back to your grandmother. Mm-hmm. So had she ever been to, I presume she had never been to the States prior to your mother and father moving here. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's definitely correct.
So when was the first time that she came over to visit? Do you know?
I know she came over when my brother and I were babies, basically, to help take care of us. So I think my first distinct memories like of her being here was being young and like jumping on a glass like the sofa and like tripping on a glass table when I was young and like having to go to the hospital and get stitches and everything. So I remember my grandma like always being sort of in the background as a young child, like helping me potty train and like letting me nap on her in the afternoon in like Saginaw, Michigan, which is the first place in Michigan my parents moved from West Virginia. So yeah, and then it was kind of like ducking in and out. like she would go back to China for a couple of years, and then she would come back to the U.S. to stay with us for another few years. But she has really fond memories of the U.S., I think. Her favorite thing to talk about is really, like, when we were young and when she could take care of us and, like, chase us and push us around in, like, big plastic toy cars or whatever. And she, even for a time, like, cultivated a really happy life and community, I think, in the U.S. She would do, like, traditional Chinese watercolor paintings or, like, paper cuttings, and she would take them to, like, a university art fair and, like, sell them. And she picked up different phrases and words in English that she still retains to this day, which she's, like, very proud of. She's always bragging about how good her memory is and just, like, how sharp her mind still is at her age.
That's great. What was the Chinese community like in Michigan where you grew up?
Michigan, I feel like there were quite a few families and that were similar to mine, especially in, like, the Southeast Michigan area, like Metro Detroit area. A lot of interaction with these families in this community, like, on a weekly basis. My brother and I went to essentially, like, a kind of like a Sunday school for learning Chinese every week. It would take place every Saturday, and we would go to this middle school not far from our home, and we would learn Chinese from these, like, really weird, like, Chinese textbooks that were basically made for similarly, like, second generation kids who grew up speaking mostly English and Chinese. And then after class let out, then we would go play, like, volleyball and basketball. And my parents had this whole group of friends that all played volleyball together once or twice a week. And, like, parties at each other's house where adults would play, like, poker or, like, mahjong or something. So I think around that kind of community, my parents and my grandmother, it was a lot more comfortable where they could, you know, actually talk to people in Mandarin and kind of relate over similar experiences and backgrounds and a shared language, essentially.
Nice. And then, do you have memories of when the first time you had Pizza Hut with your grandmother or even without your grandmother was in the States? Or around when that, you know, came to be?
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure of the exact time, but I guess that was just, like, a common, or not even, pizza was, like, a common enough childhood experience. Yeah. But, like, weirdly enough, we only had Pizza Hut, I want to say, like, a few times in the U.S., actually. It wasn't until we started buying it in China that became, like, more frequent Pizza Hut customers. Yeah. I remember eating, like, in a Pizza Hut before, and it was like I kind of described in the essay a little bit. It's just like if you've been to a Pizza Hut, like sitting down to eat in a pizza in the U.S. it's just like a very kind of average experience, nothing to write home about, like greasy tables, sort of garish lighting, and the waitresses and like their caps and the like polos of the uniform. Nothing really spectacular, but we would, I mean, pizza itself, like getting pizza carry out or making like frozen pizza, that was a pretty common occurrence. And I remember my grandma, when she would pop a frozen pizza in the oven for us, she said she would love watching my brother and I like divvy up the pizza after it was done, just like cut it up and decide, okay, you get a slice first and then I get to pick a slice and then you get to pick again. So very egalitarian and fair system.
That's the best. I think, you know, one thing that really resonated with me is your description of Pizza Hut in China. So I visited China in 2014 and ate at a Pizza Hut there, something that I would never do in the States or really traveling anywhere else. And then this year, you know, was flying actually through Beijing and had pizza again at the airport the second time, more as a result of a lack of other options. But what you said is really spot on. Like Pizza Hut in China is an upscale like dining experience. Yeah. It's very different. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of options on the menu besides pizza.
Did you end up eating pizza when you were there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I only got pizza the two times I mm-hmm. went to Pizza Hut. But I was like, this is interesting. Steak and, you know, all these other things.
Yeah.
Have you ever delved into any of the other food items on the Pizza Hut menu?
Yeah, a few. Actually, one mini anecdote that I guess it was in an earlier draft, but my editor and I ended up cutting it because it just like didn't really fit with the rest of the piece. I actually went to like an afternoon tea or tasting menu-ish kind of experience at this local Pizza Hut with my uncle and my cousin and my mom once when I was younger, like in my teens, where they would bring these various, you would pay a set price and then they would bring like a set menu of dishes up to you. I remember distinctly like chicken wings for sure, like onion rings and like fries or fried potatoes and some kind of like steak or beef kind of thing as well. And I think like a fried like fish ball or something like that, as well as like drink, like a couple of different like sugary drinks, and a dessert. And so that was an experience, like kind of sitting there and looking around and seeing all these other people, most of whom seemed like school children or like teenagers, similar to I guess my age at the time, who had come there after school or on the weekends and just like spend their allowances eating this set menu in this kind of fancier environment, and it was kind of a surreal experience.
Yeah,
but it was interesting. I don't really remember much about the other foods, so I guess that means they didn't really make much of an impression. Like they're fine, I guess, as fine as just like a standard faux American-ish place could be.
Yeah, I mean, I recall there's like pictures of all the dishes on mm-hmm. the menu, which never looked that appetizing.
But... No, I don't know what it is about. Like they got the lighting wrong or something about it. It just doesn't look that appealing.
Yeah. I mean, for people that aren't familiar, there's a lot of American chains in China. What are some mm-hmm. other sort of bigger chains that exist throughout China? And do you ever hit up any of those when you're back?
Yeah. KFC is like one of the other really big ones, and I actually do like the KFC in China. I think they have like a spicy like fried chicken sandwich or something that I think is like good, and I think it has like the stamp of approval from most people in my like immediate family who have tried it. So there's KFC, there's like Burger King, McDonald's is also a really big one. I think the McDonald's in China is the first place McDonald's I actually ever tried their like apple pie, even before I'd had it in America. So that was a fun experience as well. Like Papa John's, like all these different chains. I think I've never seen a Wendy's. That's like one of the American chains that I've not seen there. But yeah, they have a ton of chains, and there are even now a lot of homegrown options cropping up that are either like vaguely American, sort of copying from the American style fast food chains, or even like Chinese fast food places where they would serve you like very quick noodles or like dumpling options. So there's just like infinite amount of food in China right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Do you remember how old you were the first time you went to China?
I was a baby from what my parents tell me.
Okay.
I remember because they said I was like very, very sick the first time I went back to China, and I wouldn't stop crying on the plane, and I was, I guess, the baby that, like, everyone is terrified of when they get on a plane and they hear the cries and the sobs yeah. and the wailing.
It's not an easy trip from Michigan. You
know, No, I guess not. Like, that's a long haul.
Yeah.
So that was the first time. But the first time I remember was probably when I was, like, 4 or so. And then, you know, throughout childhood, it would be, like, every 3 or 4 years you would go back. And then once I became a teenager, I think it would, the frequency sort of ramped up to maybe every other year, or sometimes even every year, just depending on like our availability, like money or like the cost of plane tickets. And, you know, of course with my parents, like a major consideration has always been like how, like the passage of time and how like their parents were aging, like just the desire to be able to get in as much visits and being able to spend time with them before, you know, inevitably, like, grandparents will get older.
Sure. Did you ever meet your grandfather? Or?
No. So the my Lala's husband, or in Chinese, he'll be Lao Ye, he died before I was born.
You mentioned he was a lot older, or notably.
Yeah, he was older than my grandmother, and yeah, it was a really difficult time, I think, back then, especially with, like, the Cultural Revolution and, like, the stuff. He had been, like, in the Communist Party, the sort of, like, OG Communist Party, but apparently there had been, like, some trouble with, like, Mao Zedong's, like, wife, who was his classmate at one point, but I guess he ended up being in prison under the communist rule for a number of years, and of course, like, health deteriorated a lot during that time, and it was a terrible time for, like, my grandmother and my mother, and so when he got out, you know, he was able to see, he was still able to sort of meet my dad and stuff, like, live a number of years longer, but yeah, he died before either my brother or I were born.
Gotcha. When was the last? So you were there back in October 2017. Any upcoming trips planned?
Probably. I think I should have gone this year at some point, but it didn't really work out. Just busy schedule and work and stuff like that. I'd like to go back next year, I think. Maybe in the springtime. Ideally, it's a time that it kind of has to match up with either an American holiday or, like, a Chinese holiday, just so that we can take advantage of that a little bit more. So sometime next year, I think I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Does your grandmother know she's famous?
No, I told her about this, and, like, my mom told her about this. It was funny when she said, like, My grandmother's most pressing concern, she was, like, just, like, craning for any mention of her specifically. And she even asked, like, did Jenny write about my art anywhere? Like, her paintings, which she's very proud of. And we had to tell her, like, no, I didn't. I'm sorry. So I guess she's aware of it, but I don't really know how much she cares or has had any, like, strong reaction. But she's always, like, super proud when I am doing stuff like this. And I wrote, like, a mini essay or something as about her as an assignment for, like, Chinese school, like, 10 years ago or something, that she's kept the entire time. And she still enjoys, like, reading it. Of course, it's written in Mandarin, so she can't actually read it. But she's always been, like, very supportive of whenever I want to do anything creative, since she, you know, she has, like, she enjoys art and stuff as well, so she likes sharing that sort of creative passion that I do.
That's great. So the article comes out. What kind of feedback or response did you get?
Yeah, I was really excited about the sort of response, since I hadn't really been expecting or raising my hopes about anything. And since it was also the first time I kind of written and published a first person, like, very personal thing, as compared to, like, you know, plain reporting or cultural criticism or whatever, where you can remove yourself a little bit. I got a lot of really positive notes and, like, comments and replies and stuff on social media, like on Twitter. A few different people just, like, randomly emailed me to tell me, like, oh, I really liked it, or it resonated with them, or something like that. And other, like, food writers or editors commenting that they liked it, and seeing where it ended up, like, it ended up getting, like, picked up on long reads and long form, which, as a person who is, like, very into, like, feature writing and, like, the kind of places that curate and share those really well, that was immensely, like, flattering. And I don't imagine that I can do any better than that personally. So the response was really touching and super encouraging. I think it made me really want to write a lot more, or at least not be as afraid of writing.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned before, well, it seems like you've been writing for decades. So tell us a little bit more. I mean, I know you were working at Eater, now you're working at Slate. What does day-to-day at work look like for you?
I'm not, like I mentioned before, I don't do like writing or like editing full-time or anything like that. I work in kind of more audience development and strategy kind of fields. So at Eater, I was a newsletter editor, so running the newsletter program. And then at Slate, which I moved to 3 or 4 months ago at this point, audience engagement, just kind of like broader social media and like audience growth kind of strategy and stuff like that. But I'd like to see if I can, you know, write or edit more, not just in like my spare time, but trying to see the ways I can sort of sneak it into my daily work. So TBD, that's still like a work in progress.
Sneak this piece into the Slate newsletter.
Oh yeah. Yeah, of course.
Where do you like to get pizza in the city?
Oh, so I mean, I'm for my lazy answer is like the neighborhood pizza joint. So I live up in Yorkville in the 70s, and Delizia 73 is my closest slice joint. And I, at the end of a long day or when I just don't have any energy or any food in my fridge, it's very easy to just stop by there and get a slice. Like hot, steaming hot, like vodka pizza is very good.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I for a neighborhood place, it's like, I like it a lot.
You need a good neighborhood place.
Yeah. Yeah. Other places that I'll like travel to go to for pizza. I love Prince Street Pizza. The pepperoni slice is just amazing. And then Joe's is good. I sort of tried to do like a mini slice crawl around Manhattan or like Midtown Manhattan at one point and tried places like, what is it, like Kiss My Slice or other places like that. And none of them really stood out to me. I guess the ones that stood out really just continued to be Prince and my neighborhood place. But I have to make it out to try a lot of other slices like Poly Cheese is where everyone I know has been going recently, so I really want to go there.
Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah, a lot of other places.
Poly was the last guest on the podcast.
Yeah, so. I saw that. Oh my god, does he know what a legend he is?
I tried to convey that to him, but maybe he'll listen to this and tell you the same. So, so I wanted to ask you, how far was the town that you grew up in Michigan from Detroit?
Pretty close. So I grew up in Troy, Michigan, which is just sort of like a suburb really in the Metro Detroit area. So going to Detroit was like a 40-minute drive.
Okay, so not that far.
Yeah, so not that far.
So growing up, did you have Detroit-style pizza ever?
Yeah. Growing up, like one of the, I guess, like chain pizzas that I really enjoyed was Jet's Pizza, which is a local chain as I now know, and it's like Detroit style sort of chain fast food pizza, which I never known. I just thought that was just normal pizza. But yeah, so I had that kind of version frequently growing up. But I wasn't until after I started working at Eater that I kind of consciously learned that, oh, Detroit style pizza is a real thing.
It's only become a real thing or something that people in New York knew about in the past couple of years.
I guess that's right. So then after that, like when I think at some point when I went home for, I don't remember either Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that, went back, drove to Detroit and like had a proper like Buddy's pizza.
Yeah, that's the best.
And it was really good. But also I'd been like, wow, I've been eating like fast food like Detroit pizza for a while and it's just as good. Who knew? But yeah, Detroit style pizza is very good.
Jets is still around.
Yeah, it's still around. They have very good like cheesy bread as well. I think any pizza, if it's in square format, honestly tastes a little bit better.
Have you had any of the New York Detroit style pizza places like Emmy Squared?
Not yet. I've been meaning to try them and like compare notes and just see like how does this compare to Detroit style pizza that's actually in Detroit. But I don't know. What are your feelings on those places?
I love Emmy Squared. Mm-hmm. I think it's the best Detroit style pizza in New York. There's a couple other spots that are doing some decent Detroit style pizza, but it's definitely like growing trend in terms of people trying to tackle that style. One of the first Detroit-style pizza places I ever had was actually at a place called Via 313, which is in Austin. So I really like that place. And then, of course, like Buddy's is you know, the best. Classic. So, yeah, worth a trip to Detroit alone.
Yeah, for so many reasons. Detroit is a great place to visit.
Yeah. When was the last time you had a pizza in the States? Have you ever been to one in New York?
No, I haven't. But I actually looked up, like, I was like, oh, maybe I should hit up a Pizza Hut in New York. And I looked it up, and I'm tempted almost to go, but I would, I don't know. It's the thing where it's like, do I really want to?
It feels like sacrilegious.
Yeah, do I really want to, like, make the trek out there and go for this when I could just go to China and get Pizza Hut there?
I know, so much more convenient.
But I don't, maybe I might. It could be, like, kind of interesting to try it. I don't know. I've never liked, even as a child, like, eating Pizza Hut in the U.S. I always thought it was too greasy or too kind of, I didn't like the crust necessarily. But for some reason, it tasted good in China. So I don't know. Maybe there's a difference, or maybe it's just all like a mental thing.
Yeah. The last thing I want to ask you about, it seems like in the debate as to whether pineapples should appear on pizza, that you are pro pineapple. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think pineapple on pizza tastes good. like not just on Hawaiian style, but if you have like, you know, a chicken, like chicken on a pizza, like throw some pineapple on there, like barbecue sauce or something, like that tastes good. Like, who's the politician who said like he was gonna ban pineapple on pizza or something? Some like foreign leader or something like that.
That was a thing recently.
Yeah, he was joking probably, but no, I think it tastes good. I think almost anything can be a pizza topping as long as the pizza is left like structurally sound.
Yeah, I agree with that. How was it Hawaiian style that you focused on when you made this trek to Pizza Hut?
I think we had tried Hawaiian at some point in the U.S. My grandma was still staying with us at some point. And I think my mom, when I asked, she said the reason was just like, oh, well, your grandma likes pineapple. So I guess she just figured we'll go for Hawaiian. And
yeah.
It turned out to be the right decision. My grandma still likes eating Hawaiian pizza.
That's great. Yeah, I don't feel too strongly either way. I tend to agree with you in that, you know, if it tastes good to you on pizza, you should go for it. But I will say I'm craving pineapple pizza at the moment. So after talking about it.
Okay, I guess they should like sponsor me.
Yeah.
Like, make me the queen of like branded pineapple pizza.
Well, yeah, hopefully the people at Pizza Hut will give this a listen. I will say that, you know, for anyone that, you know, wants to look up the article on Eater, there's some really delicious photos that accompany the piece. I assume that was a photo shoot, or were those photos that you
No, took? I just took those when I was visiting her. It's actually like kind of called out in the piece, the part where I was like, my grandma was like in a mood and she was swatting me away. Like I was just buzzing around her with my camera. So yeah, I do photography as well. And I usually carry my camera with me when I go traveling, and for some reason, the lighting in her apartment always makes things look really, really nice. So I took those photos, and
yeah, they're beautiful.
Thank you so much. Really
great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. This was awesome. I'm so honored to have you on, and for your beautiful reading of the piece. And it was great learning more about you and your family, and looking forward to trying some Pizza Hut very soon.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks, Jenny. We will see you guys soon.